This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
He pioneered Jets blogging and podcasting. He brought smiles to the faces of Jets fans all over the world. He was there through the good and bad. And then, one day, he vanished. People far and wide wondered, where has he gone? When will he return? Thankfully, the answer is now. The OG of Jets podcasting and vlogging is back.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
This is There's Always Next Year with Brian Bassett.
I'm back. The real me. Let's not make a whole thing of it.
And his co-hosts, Chef Travis Milton.
Today we're going to be making the students my tasty baked ziti with basil and fresh mozzarella.
And Josh Conrad.
Oh, my brother, testify.
On Turn on the Jets Digital.
Welcome back to There's Always Next Year. I am your host, Brian Bassett. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian_Bassett. And along with me is Josh Conrad, who you can find on Twitter at Josh_Conrad. And then, of course, as always, we have Travis Milton. You can find on Twitter at -37board27. Gentlemen, we have a football game to talk about. But before we do, we have to talk about the fact that Travis, my man, helped me out over the weekend at a fundraiser for an organization I am part of. And Josh, since you weren't there to experience it, Travis came. He it was like a chef event, and you know, chef beer, music in this warehouse space. And when he arrived on his table, we don't do a lot in terms of, you know, taking care of the chefs. Like we did as much as we could. Travis was pretty self-contained, but on his table was a 12 pack of White Claw waiting for him to drink. Travis, which was the best White Claw in that variety pack that I gave you?
Grapefruit is always the best in the variety pack.
Grapefruit's the best.
Yep. Grapefruit is the best, followed by lime. Then black cherry. Actually, no, then raspberry, then black cherry.
Okay. So
when have you had mango?
I have, and I dislike it thoroughly.
Really?
Yeah.
I like the mango one.
I'm just not I don't like mango in general, pretty much. I lived and cooked through that whole phase in the 90s where mango salsa was on everything.
Oh, yeah. So. Yes.
They kind of have a strong.
What's that? A nice Chilean sea bass? It'd be a shame.
Oh yeah, always
mango salsa.
Chilean sea bass with a mango salsa.
So no mango for Travis. Now Travis, there was an incident with the White Claw at the Hammers and Ales event. What happened?
It was a bunch of bullshit. This lady walked up, and she just reaches in and grabs one out of my freaking out of my 12 pack, and I looked and I was like, oh, sorry, that's mine. There's beer available over at the bar. And she looked back down. She was like, I already took one earlier. And I was like, oh, okay, so that was you. I was like, so just want to let you know, they brought this as like a welcome gift for me. And she was like, I've been here all damn day. I don't really care. Cracked it. Walked off, and I was like, what the hell is that?
Wow.
Luckily, she took black cherry, so it was fine.
Okay, good. Yeah, so it's not high on your list. I mean, had she touched one of your grapefruit, I think you might have punched that lady out.
I would have been very angry. I would have caused a quote-unquote scene.
So to explain, so this is Hammers and Ales is an event that I'm part of, a board. It's basically a lending library of tools for a charitable organization. There's a number of them spread around the country. Richmond has one of these lending libraries. So anybody who's doing good in the community, they can use all of these tools, shovels, rakes, you know, just power equipment, scissor lifts, like everything. It's awesome. And so it's fun to be part of. And this year was the first year where we had chefs, and Travis came. He was kind of one of the cornerstone chefs at the event. And he even, Josh, gave me a rock. It's a Superstars music card made by ProSet from, yep, I have to admit,
1991, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be early 90s. So, so it's a Zach Wilde card. Now, Zach is,
yes,
has two Ks. So, yeah, he was a protege, I guess, of Ozzy Osbourne back in the day.
He played guitar for Ozzy Osbourne after Randy Rhoads passed away, and they burned through a couple guitar players, and then Zach Wilde took over.
He's got to be – I mean, I know Zach Wilde. He's got to be, like, 19 in this picture. Oh, my God. That is a young Zach Wilde.
He was in an episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, if anyone is aware of that show outside of me.
So why did you give me this card? Why did you give me this Zach Wilde card, which is amazing, by the way?
Every event that I work, the point person that I work with or other chefs, I carry like a stack of these in my knife bag, and I give these out to the people that I work an event with. Mm-hmm. I bought there's a record store called Steady Sounds down on Broad Street in Richmond, Virginia. And they bought like a bunch of sets of these and a bunch of packs just as a joke. So I kept going in there and buying records. And every time they were like, it's 25 cents a pack. I was like, well, hell, I'll buy like 10 packs. Let's do this. And then all of my staff at Comfort started doing the same. So it was like, we went back into second grade and we're like trading cards with each other. The only one that is never given out, there's two that are never given out, and it's any Belinda Carlisle card.
Oh.
Or Key Sweat. Key Sweat stays with me always.
That's fair. All right, I'm going to start scouring eBay for these music cards from 1991, because I got to get me a full set.
They're amazing.
We are delaying the inevitable. So we're going to talk about the Jets and their week 8 loss, 29-15 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville fans were flying ghost banners behind planes, and the mascot was wearing a sheet as if he was a ghost, and the Jets looked like they were eating Travis's cheesecake from last week. But Josh, let's talk a little bit about this game. When you watch this game and you watched the defense play, did you have any thoughts? Were you depressed? Did you find a cheesecake yourself? Where did you go when you watched this team play defense?
Yeah, it was torrentially pouring here in Southern Connecticut yesterday. And so I made my way home a little bit before kickoff, and was unaware that the Jacksonville Jaguars were also going to be starting Tom Brady against the Jets this week. I didn't realize we can make any quarterback, one named Gardner Minshew the second, Minshew, throw 22 completions for 279 yards and 3 touchdowns for a cool quarterback rating of 85.6. Listen, if this defense can do nothing, and it really can't do anything at this point, you know, even nice plays from Leonard Williams are being called back. I mean, that's the point we're at, is that there is no impact player left. From Tremaine Johnson, who Brian rightfully tweeted is his own bad luck charm, because he may have been getting traded this week, and yet he had to go out and turn his ankle, and so now he's probably not going to be coming off the Jets salary cap.
If you took him for like a 2022 seventh rounder, right? Like even if you say, sure, we'll take that and we'll eat all this salary, like, why would you do that now with a guy with a bum ankle? So you want to trade this guy and then you roll him out there and play him? Like, what? Showcase Tremaine Johnson in all his glory? Smart, right? Right? Yeah. Right, Josh?
Nothing seems to make sense with the Jets these days. I mean, there were several plays in. There's a long run early from Leonard Fournette, the big 60-yard run. There was the big Chris Conley play in the second quarter that – or might have been toward the end of the first quarter. Just so many ridiculous things happening that, like, the big play stuff, Jamal Adams goes and blitzes, and then no one's back there to pick up Chris Conley. He runs for a 70-yard touchdown. Like, these are things that, like, your 6-year-old son or your 5-year-old nephew in Madden would never let happen. Like, there's just baseline defense that is not happening with this team. And so I am 100% finished with Greg Williams, defensive guru. Like, he has talent on this team. I know Mosey's been injured. I know there's been problems in the secondary, but he's had, you know, one of the highest potential defensive lines in recent NFL history, and none of those guys are making an impact. Go look at the top of the 2019 NFL draft. Quinnen Williams is the only one not making an impact for his team. Like, there is major problems with this scheme. And with disciplines, man, I'm just done. I'm done with this defense. I'm done with Greg Williams. I cannot wait to move on from him.
Travis, any cheesecake? Yes. Any thoughts from the Cheesecake Alley?
I will tell you, number one, there's no more cheesecake, and number two, if this keeps up, there very well might be a cheap whiskey shortage in the United States.
Oh my God! Just like we had a White Claw shortage, you're saying now we're gonna have a cheap whiskey shortage?
I'm seeing a pattern here.
It's like all getting sucked. It's all getting sucked to like Bristol, Virginia. Like all the White Claw is just like making its way into this vortex, this black hole. And now the whiskey is all going to be, and you're like at the bottom. You're like at the bottom of the black hole, like soaking it all in. Love it.
Yep. That's me.
This will be known as the famous mellow corn shortage of 2019.
Oh God, no. If there's one thing I can't do in this world, it's drink mellow corn. My time in New York destroyed that for me. If you hear me drinking mellow corn, it's real bad. It's real bad.
Oh yeah, yeah. We have come to end of days if you're drinking mellow corn.
I mean, looking at this team, it's not just the defense, it's the offense, but it's, if you look at every piece of talent that is on the New York Jets, every single person seems to have completely and utterly regressed. No one is playing anywhere near as they were last year, which is real, real freaking bad. Cause I don't, you know, it was, there were some few, you know, the bright points were few and far between last year.
Right. But you look at what Todd Bowles is doing with the Tampa Bay defense. Hello. Like, yeah. You know, like, and so the point is like the whole problem with Todd Bowles, right, was that he was elevated to a level which he was not going to be successful, right? It's the Peter principle, you know, manifest, where you have a defensive coordinator who gets the head coaching job. They have no idea what they're doing. They're terrible. And then they get bumped back to their rightful role, defensive coordinator. And like Tampa is having a pretty darn good year for, you know, basically a Swiss cheese defense. So you have this thing where they get, not that Todd Bowles was going to be demoted to defensive coordinator, but at least he could run a defense. For all Todd Bowles' many, many, many faults, at least he could hold down the defensive side of the ball by and large. Wasn't perfect, but that is his rightful role, and that's the problem with the Jets, is they put these people in positions where they're not ready or able. And right, with, to your point, Travis, the defense, like, they're regressing because Greg Williams is not even a defensive coordinator. Like, he was at one point, but now he's not that anymore. And so the weird thing, though, is, like, this is the one thing I'll say, guys, I'm curious what your thoughts are. The run defense, aside from the Leonard Fournette play, now I get it, you have to take the whole thing into the equation here, but aside from that 66-yard run, it was actually pretty good. On the other 24 carries of the game, I think they gave up just about 17 yards. So when you consider the fact that Leonard Fournette play, you know, the one play where basically Marcus May misses the tackle and then Daryl Roberts is like, you know, oh, let me guide you towards the end zone the whole time. You know, they did pretty well. The problem is, this is a passing league, right? And we saw that yesterday with Gardner Minshew and DJ Chark and Dede Westbrook and Chris Conley and whoever else they have on their team. Like, okay, it doesn't matter what you do against the run. Not to say that, you know, you never want to defend the run, but we're in an era of the NFL where defending the run is not valuable. It's not as valuable as defending the pass. And so the Jets have, like, whereas you look at what Mike Pettine's doing now, the team was kind of built around him, but when Mike Pettine talks about his defense, he says, yeah, like we actually entice teams to run the ball against us, the Packers, because we know that it's less efficient than them throwing the ball. And we're good. We have a great, you know, secondary, so we can defend. We can defend against the pass. So they're almost like funneling players towards running the ball because they know ultimately it's only going to end up in their own defeat. Versus the Jets are like the inverse of that. Like they're by and large good against the run, but they're funneling plays to the actual more efficient part of the like of playing against the defense, which is the pass, because they're so freaking bad. So like. This is not area. I feel like we could just repeat this week in and week out, but I don't know where to go from here other than to just like on repeat, say like you're emphasizing the wrong things, Jets front office and coaching staff. Now I get it. Like this coaching staff has inherited this, but still they haven't made any great, you know, great adjustments in the meantime. Correct?
Right. And honestly, like even the big plays, the two big plays, the Conley play, the Fournette play, I mean, I will certainly agree that you remove those two big plays, those guys have average days, but this is the NFL, that one guy makes a 60-yard play, almost 99% of the time it's going to end up in points. And so, like, one play per drive that goes for 20-plus yards or 30-plus yards, is that's your downfall. I mean, that's those two touchdowns. I know the Fournette play didn't end in a touchdown, but those two drives are the 14-point deficit. And so, like, you remove two big plays from this game, and maybe the Jets are right in it, even with Sam Darnold throwing three interceptions. So, like, I feel like I agree with you, and at the same time say they cannot stop giving up the big play, and that's what right. That's what's killing them.
Yeah, that is true. Travis, Josh just talked there about interceptions and, you know, kind of Sam Darnold. But anyway, so when we talk about the offense and talk about interceptions, like, you know, when I was listening to the game and then I was watching the game back, you know, you just see so many times where Sam Darnold's pressured. I can't remember if he was like hit about 13 times or pressured or hit roughly around 13 times, obviously 8 interceptions, 3 turnovers, you know, throwing off his back foot repeatedly. You know, the Jets offensive line is, I mean, it's like calling them traffic cones is being generous in terms of what they're able to accomplish there. So, and so again, right. So, you know, this young quarterback doesn't have the time. We see that there were points like in that first series where he moves the ball pretty effectively down the field, short passes. But, you know, as the game ground on, it just got worse and worse and worse for Darnold and the passing game specifically. So, Travis, when you think about this group, you think about what they did with Assembly, you think about them moving Adoga to the left tackle, like, you know, I don't know. Is it just at this point that we need to see this team get to the end of the season and then blow it all up in terms of the offensive line? Or is there anything that this team can salvage when it comes to their offensive line?
I don't see much at all. I mean, it was, it's so bad. That's one of the most bizarre situations I've ever heard of. They wanted to put him on the bench. Why were you fighting this guy? Go ahead, go get your surgery. Cool. You were playing like crap before. Lewis has been like a little bit of a step up, but you know, and I think he's probably playing the best of the entire line,
of the group.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Adoga seems to be pretty good in like occasionally in run protection, but pass protection, he is dog shit. And that kind of speaks to the entire line. I don't know. Like I don't think that there's a good answer outside of just blowing it up and going from scratch, which scares the crap out of me. But you know, I don't think that there's another answer.
Yeah.
Back to Assembly just for a second, guys. Like, there's got to be something else we're not all knowing, right? Like, maybe the Jets are. I know they said that they didn't want him having the surgery because they thought it was a pre-existing injury. I wonder if there's contract implications there or insurance implications there. It's still just like players are watching this stuff. Like Lev Bell and Jamal Adams and Sam Darnold are watching the front office and the medical staff just take unnecessary risks with players and then cut them when guys want to get surgeries that they need to be able to play at their full strength. Like, these are the dumb things that don't seem to happen other places. Like, these are the things that signal to players, don't come here, because, like, you're just going to be treated really poorly.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
What I would say is the Assembly situation, if anything, is just a microcosm of what happens in the NFL, right? So Assembly has this injury. You know, playing in the NFL is essentially this situation where you are dealing with chronic pain as a function of playing in this sport, and you just have to manage it. And you know, one of the
breaking news, guys.
Yeah.
Leonard Williams has been traded to the Giants for a third rounder and a fifth rounder in 21.
To the Giants?
You're not joking. This is serious.
Adam Schefter, not a fake account, for a third rounder this year and a fifth in 21.
A third rounder in 2020 and a fifth in 21. All right, let's talk about that. We can talk about Assembly and just all the, you know, abuses of prescription narcotics and things like that later. But so instant reaction, my thoughts, I can go a lot of directions. I'll let you guys collect your thoughts or whatever. But so Leonard Williams had a decent game against the Jaguars. He's obviously a great run stuffer. He has not been the sort of interior pressure player that we thought he would be when the Jets got him with the sixth pick of the 2015, 2016, whenever that was. But the big thing when it comes to Leonard Williams has been he probably had his best season when he was paired with that amazing group. And over time, what we've seen is what we always see with the Jets in the last 10 years is that they have overemphasized the value of defensive linemen. And right, this kind of goes to the point I was just talking about, not minutes ago, about Mike Pettin and emphasizing the run defense versus actually like de-emphasizing the run defense versus emphasizing the pass defense. The Jets have been basically trapped in, you know, in this, I don't know, time capsule where they think the best thing they should do is continually invest and reinvest and reinvest in defensive line. And okay, we get it. Quinn Williams might have been the best player in the draft this year. Leonard Williams, when the Jets got him, he was supposed to be the best player in the draft that year. And you kind of keep going back. You look at the players they got before that. Quinton Coples, Muhammad Wilkerson, you know, like it keeps going where Sheldon Richardson too. They have overinvested in this position. And in the meantime, what do we have to show for it? We only have one of those players still on the team from the first player in that kind of run. I'm not even counting Vernon Golston, but you know, in 2011, so 8 years ago was where we started that serious run of defensive linemen. The only player left from that group that is still on the Jets is now Quinnen Williams. And so they have invested in this position, which has proved useless, essentially, over time as the NFL has moved towards a passing league, towards a smaller receiver, you know, kind of the Chris Godwin type versus the Dez Bryant type, you know, spread them out football. And so they have squandered all these picks. And then on the other side of it, Josh, is the fact that they have abandoned the offensive line position. So not only have they overinvested in the defensive line, but they have abandoned, you know, properly building an offensive line. And I think the fact that these guys like Quinnen Williams, who is a great player, and I'm very excited that the Jets have him, and Leonard Williams, kind of getting back to it, the reason these guys were available is because the league is de-emphasizing this position and the Jets have not been catching up. So now we get a third rounder, which is great because the Jets need as many picks next year as they can. And hey, at this point, you know, the guy's on the last year of his deal, they get a third rounder for him, fine, I'll take it. And the Giants third rounder, I'm not sure exactly which one it is that Schefter is talking about, but it's going to be early in the round. So it's essentially like a late second pick, let's hope, or unless it's from some other team.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. by and large, but it's more than anything, it's a ratification of the fact that the Jets have been making the wrong moves for almost 10 years, you know, dating back to Mike Tannenbaum and kind of all the way up. So I don't know, what's your reaction, Travis, and then we'll get or Josh, and then we'll get Travis's.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Hopefully this, you know, accumulating picks is definitely what the motive of what this team should be in. Hopefully this is the first of several moves. I could see something all the way up to, you know, I wonder what value even a guy like Lev Bell might have on the market today. I wonder, I wonder about, you know, a Robbie Anderson. I know that's been a couple of days now going, but, you know, a third this year, a fifth next year for a guy that was, let's be honest, most likely not coming back to this team anyway next year is not a bad haul. I agree with you that he showed all the promise, and then as he had to become the guy to anchor the defense with waning talent around him, after Wilkerson was gone, after Sheldon was gone, like his value certainly plummeted a little bit. You know, hopefully this will mean a redistribution of draft capital across the, you know, across the roster. Hopefully this won't just be another lineman or, you know, taking a shot, you know, on a guy like Polite in the third round out of Florida this last year that has not panned out, obviously. You know, it comes back to what we were saying last year, which is honestly like it's who's making the decisions. If it's Joe Douglas, you know, this will now become, this draft will become his, the big shift in the, where this franchise is going. And if he's a guy that can show some clout in the draft, you know, obviously he's going to have a high first rounder, a high second rounder, and now seemingly a couple of high third rounders, you know, adding four guys in the first, you know, 70-ish picks of the NFL draft is a good place to start. So, you know, hopefully we are moving toward really distributing some of that draft capital and filling in some gaps that may be created throughout the rest of this season. So I, you know, it's fine. I will miss Leonard Williams. I was hoping, you know, he might be a guy that was going to step up this year. Him and Jamal could anchor that defense and CJ Mosley. And obviously the Jets front office feels differently. What's also interesting is now we play against him in 2 weeks, which is very interesting just to think about the fact that we turn right around and see him in a blue uniform coming at us.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a sign that the Giants are, you know, trying to build for the long term, and they're going to probably, you know, I'm sure that some contract will, you know, will shortly follow, whether it's this season or shortly after the season. You know, the Giants don't trade for Leonard Williams if they don't intend to make him a part of their group over the next couple of years. And right, they're in a situation where they have the money. They feel like Danny Dimes is their guy going forward. So they're going to, right, they're going to go all in on trying to build a team around Dimes and Barkley on the offensive side of the ball. And they need to do the same thing on the defensive side of the ball. So I get their perspective. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let's not forget, we get Nathan Shepard back. And so, you know, he might be jumping right back into Leonard Williams' spot in the rotation on that defensive line. So, like, this is not a bad haul for a guy who is going to be an unrestricted free agent and, you know, gives us some depth, hopefully, in the draft the next 2 years.
Yeah, I wish they could have gotten a second pick, you know, in 2020. But, you know, we'll take it, and kind of, you know, deferring things is never a bad thing. So, we'll appreciate having that fifth rounder in 2021. And, you know, maybe that fifth rounder in 2021 can do something for the Jets. But like, the point here is we need to start doing what smart teams do, which is, you know, acquire draft picks, trade down, get more draft picks rather than consolidate draft picks, trade up. Like this team is a long way from where they need to go. So and right, Leonard Williams does not make a difference. So at this point, I'll take it because he wasn't going to re-sign with the team anyway. Travis, yeah. What do you think about this move? The Jets trading Leonard Williams for a third rounder in 2020 and a fifth rounder in 2021.
I mean, personally, I'm totally fine with it. My one big worry is that with this and possibly some subsequent moves before the deadline, the message that's going to be sending to people like Jamal and Lev Bell and everybody that's busting their ass in the locker room and on the field, that, you know, are we giving up? Are we giving up on this season? I mean, I personally have. I gave up a few weeks ago. I think everyone realizes that when I'm shoveling cheesecake in my face in a car.
just
the team is 1-6, right? So like you basically have to go on a 9-game run with this team to, you know, maybe make the playoffs, but and that's just not happening. No. So yeah,
I just worry about the implications that this is going to have when, you know, it comes to re-signing Jamal. It comes, but I mean that's an overarching theme here. I mean that goes back to what we're talking about with Assembly. That goes back to I mean everything. You know, how are we going to retain any talent if this is the product that we're putting on the field and this is what the coaching staff is doing and this is the message that we're sending that okay, we are rebuilding in the middle of a rebuild.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
It does feel bad, and you certainly, I think, as we've talked about before, I'm not so concerned about Sam Darnold and, you know, kind of his, well, I am concerned about him, number one, his health. I'm concerned about the bad habits that he's picking up and that he might not be able to, unlearn, let's say, the bad habits that he's picking up, throwing off his back foot, you know, worrying about his protections, all that sort of thing. I do worry about those things, but by and large, like, I am most worried about Jamal Adams and kind of what this does with his, you know, he has been a stalwart, very public, you know, part of this, a leader of this team. And you see some of his reaction after the game yesterday. You know, he's starting to waver in terms of, you know, his ability to stand in front of his locker after a game and deal with this sort of thing. And so, you know, I don't think that Jamal Adams is getting traded between now and the end of the year, but he does not like being on this team if this is the sort of team that's going to be put together. So it's the problem in losing, and to your point, Travis, of starting to give up is players who are fiercely loyal to this team, right? If that's the message that they're getting from ownership and from the coaching staff, like, well, if they're giving up, like, why should I care, right? Like, why should I be part of this team? Like, why am I giving my all for this team? And I get it, they're getting paid, but I mean, it's got to be more than that. So go ahead.
One other, just two quick things. Yeah. I was just been researching here while we've been talking about it. So the 2021 fifth becomes a fourth rounder if Williams signs a contract extension with the Giants, which you have to feel like for a team that's 2-6 with the rookie quarterback who's, I mean, I know he played pretty well this week, but has not played well the majority of his starts this season. You have to believe that they think they're going to sign him to a 2 or 3 year contract. So, I mean, now if you look at it, a third rounder this year, a fourth next year, man, this is a pretty decent haul for a guy that, you know, has largely disappeared for large chunks of games, and Jets fans will be the first ones to notice that. So, man, if this is a Joe Douglas move that he's been working on for the last week or so, and after this loss, they felt like this is just it for the team. That's a pretty good trade. Like, I'm actually kind of pleased with this right now.
What is the stipulation if he signs an extension? Is it an extension or a new contract? Does it make that distinction? I don't know.
Not from what I saw. It just says if he signs a contract and stays with the Giants, the 2021 fifth becomes a fourth.
Okay.
Which I know it's another year away from seeing that pick, but
no, but I mean,
do you think the Giants get to 9-6 next, 9-7 next year? You know,
yeah, no, I like that. I hope what I worry about is the way in which they've set it up. Like, I think about the Jonathan Vilma trade. Do you remember how they set that up where they said, well, if he stays on the roster next year, then the pick will escalate kind of in this way. And what the Saints did, which what everybody fully expected, was they'll just cut him and then they'll re-sign him and then they don't have to pay the extra. So I'm sure either way we get a fifth. There's the hope that it becomes a fourth. And I think the fact that Dave Gettleman is the Giants GM only helps the fact that he's not smart enough to understand the distinction. So hopefully, right, that we can count on that being a fourth in 2021. So that's interesting. We talked about a couple other players. Robbie Anderson is another name that's been floated. I shudder to think what this offense would look like without Robbie Anderson, or you mentioned Lev Bell. We'll get to that in a second. But, like, I mean, do you have any sense of what the Jets could get or should get? Like, maybe this is not what they could get. As a fan, what would you be willing to say, okay, it's fine for the Jets to trade away Robbie Anderson at this point? What round draft pick would make you happy versus, like, what's the over-under on that, on your happiness versus frustration?
To be honest, like, with the draft record that we have, I'm not comfortable with anything because I don't know that we're going to get, you know, a proper return on the investment. That's the biggest worry. Like, I get draft capital, but I'm so gun shy of, okay, cool. Are we just, I know it's Joe Douglas now and not Mike Maccagnan, but as you've said, it goes all the way back to Tannenbaum. You know what, we're trading away these players that are
proven to be, and they're worthwhile. No commodities. Right.
It's like we're on that freaking game show in the 70s, and it's like, oh, you've got a car, and behind door number one, behind door number two.
Let's make a deal with Monty Hall.
Yeah, let's make a deal. Would you trade those for what's behind door number three? And I'm not confident that it's not a freaking busted microwave.
It's a goat. It's a goat with a lifetime supply of hay.
Exactly.
Which is a joke because goats are ruminants, right? Like, they don't like hay. They prefer leafy things. Or they're not ruminants. I don't know.
They'll eat about anything. I've seen them eat cans. Saw me eat a tire one time.
Oh, my God. So right. So I think that's the point is, like, do you keep Robbie Anderson, extend Robbie Anderson, give him a kind of market deal, a Quincy Enunwa style deal, and then kind of bring in other players? Because, you know, as we've shown, we've discussed, Robbie Anderson is not the sort of player who's going to, you know, whatever, post up and knock people down to get the ball or, you know, fight back in coverage. Like, either he's open and he's flying down the field or the ball is an interception or whatever. So there's a limited value to which I would say, I think for me, I totally get your point. I'm not going to trust the draft process of this team at this point. That said, like, just answering my own question, it's only fair. I'd say, like, if they got a fourth rounder, I'd be ecstatic. Like, if it was a fifth or lower, I would probably not be as pleased. The thing here is Robbie Anderson was an undrafted player, and so, like, it's hard to figure out what he's going to get, you know, or fetch in the trade market. So he just doesn't have that. If a guy who was, like, one of the top players in his draft, Leonard Williams, is only netting a third, like, you would be shocked. I would be shocked if Robbie Anderson netted a fifth. It's probably would be more like a sixth or seventh. And then at that point, yeah, what are we doing here? You might as well just extend the guy because it's just money at that point.
Hey, it's Scott Mason. Sorry, just wanted to jump in real quick and let you know about a couple of great things going on, courtesy of Play Like a Jet. First of all, I got to tell you about CBS Sports HQ, brand new streaming sports network. It's live 24/7 and it's absolutely free. You get breaking news, highlights, fantasy advice, and gambling picks too. As I said before, though, the best part of it is it's absolutely free. I don't mean for a week or a month. I mean it's completely free forever. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, so no Skip Bayless or Stephen A. Smith. Just sports for real sports fans at a great price of, yep, you guessed it, absolutely nothing. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. Also, if you're looking for tickets to the big event coming to town, you're going to want to download the Vivid Seats mobile app because right now, if you use the promo code OVERTIME at checkout, you'll get yourself a discount of up to $100 on your very first purchase. Every single purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, and you automatically get enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. You can see concerts, sporting events, or any kind of arena show that you like. They've got tickets for everything. So make sure you download the Vivid Seats mobile app today. Enter the promo code OVERTIME at checkout, and you'll receive a discount of up to $100 on your first purchase. And finally, got to tell you about mybookie.ag. My brother Craig comes on the show once a week to give you his gambling tips. If you would have followed his advice, you could have made some big money betting over at mybookie.ag because right now, if you sign up, you'll get your first deposit doubled when you use the promo code OVERTIME. That's right. They're going to match your very first deposit when you use the promo code OVERTIME. Bet on the Jets or bet on any of the other games around the league. Plus, you can make prop bets like how many times I'm going to contemplate punching a hole in my television set because of Tremaine Johnson. Those aren't real prop bets, but you know what I'm saying. You can bet the over-under, and you can bet on who's going to have the most touchdowns or who's going to have the most rushing yards. Normal human being stuff, not the kind of stuff that gets my mind going. So head over to mybookie.ag right now, sign up, and you will get your first deposit doubled. Mybookie.ag, you play, you win, and you get paid. Brian, sorry again to cut in on the show. Go ahead, my friend.
Tremaine Johnson, what would you take for him? I would take a bag of dicks. I would take some empty White Claw cans that I could take to the aluminum scrapyard.
Get rid of that dude, like for real. Give me someone's mortgage. Get rid of him.
Fair, okay. You take an underwater tarp mortgage. Okay, cool.
100%, yes.
I would take cheesecake crumbs that have been stuck in a truck somewhere in rural Virginia for the last week.
That sounds good. All right. All right. So we've got our Tremaine Johnson. Any other Tremaine? I mean, there's no way. No team is dumb enough to trade for Tremaine Johnson, right? Like,
no,
unless it's like some sort of like, oh, we're going to use him as an elaborate like decoy in our defense. Like, I don't even know, why would anyone trade for this guy? He's so bad. He is so bad. But the last player, which you mentioned, which I find interesting, and you kind of posted on your Twitter page, Josh, is Le'Veon Bell. Bell has been a stand-up guy. He's been a leader of this team. But, right, there are these questions of, he wasn't Adam Gase's guy. Like, what – like, they basically didn't involve him all that much in the game yesterday against Jacksonville. The fact that the offensive line is utter crap, and you can't – like, I think we're very much proving the fact that I would much rather have a good offensive line and Bilal Powell – at 24 years old, than a bad offensive line and a superstar running back. Like, have we proven that yet? I think we've proven the fact that running backs don't matter. Offensive lines do matter. So would you be willing to trade Le'Veon Bell? I mean, the cap hit, I'm not so worried about the cap hit. It'll be ridiculous. I think if they trade him, this year, the Jets take like a $6 million hit, and they would probably carry some things a couple of years forward. They certainly can't cut him, but I don't know, guys, what would you be happy with if the Jets traded Le'Veon Bell? I don't think it's happening, but if they did, what would you be happy with?
I'm still on the known commodity. Like, I'm staunchly in that. Like, he's a known commodity. We've got him for 3 years, you know, right up until where the drop-off is going to probably be with him. You know, don't trade him. Let's see what we can do with the offensive line next year, because, you know, if we can piece together something that's decent, I know he can make something out of it. It just happens that this offensive line is historically and epically fucking bad. So mm-hmm. I can't put the onus on him, and I would much rather have him there next year with a hopefully revamped offensive line than trade him away for some pipe dreams.
And while this is going to be a great skill position draft coming up in 2020, like, yeah, the point here is it's kind of a bird in hand versus two in the bush situation. Like, you have Le'Veon Bell, there's going to be a land rush for these skill position players to, you know, fill in all over the league. And while the Jets could certainly benefit and use some of those skill position players, it might present a buying opportunity for them around offensive line, around cornerbacks, because other teams are rushing for, for the running backs and the quarterbacks and the wide receivers that are gonna be coming out of this group. Josh, what do you think about Lev Bell? Keep him, trade him? And if so, what would you be happy taking?
Yeah, I do want to keep him. I want to keep Robbie Anderson. I think those are guys that are just tricky to find in the open market or in the draft relative to their value to this offense. I think we've all said it. If the offensive line was fixed, Sam doesn't get mono. Like, I still think we'd have some reasonably optimistic, you know, expectations of this team for the rest of this season. But, you know, with how bad that offensive line has fallen apart, and a million other things that just seem problematic. I don't see you moving them. Honestly, the only team that I thought of that might have been interested, in Lev Bell, maybe making a push here, would have been like the Arizona Cardinals. So I think just signed a deal for Kenyon Drake with the Dolphins. But, you know, that might have been an interesting place if David Johnson was going to be down for a few more weeks and they wanted to add another guy that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury with Lev Bell and Kyler Murray could be a truly terrifying offense. But I don't know. If we got a third rounder, maybe two picks similar to this, maybe a third and a fourth rounder staggered over 2 years from a team, that would at least make me consider it. But I agree with you guys that the Lev Bell value is higher to the Jets than he's going to be in the open market right now. So, and listen, like relatively speaking, he hasn't had a ton of usage. And so if for the rest of this year, they kind of just, play out the schedule and don't really push these guys to put them in bad positions or, give him 30 carries in a random game against, the Dolphins. I feel like he's a valuable guy for the next two seasons for the Jets. So, man, I'd love them to keep both of those guys. I don't think we're getting first or second rounders for either Lev Bell or for Robbie Anderson anyway. And so hold on to the guys and hopefully rebuild this offensive line and make another run at it next year.
Well, Adam Gase escapes our wrath this week thanks to trading Leonard Williams. So we'll talk about Adam Gase next week. But before we go, any other parting thoughts about this team or the coaching or the trade deadline or just kind of, where this team needs to be focused in the coming week?
I don't have anything, but I do want to give kudos to Josh for the text that I got this morning about him going down the Golden Girls rabbit hole and the hashtag Where's Coco?
Oh, that was me. That was me.
Oh, that was you?
Oh, that was
Where is Coco? I got to know. Where's Coco?
Coco actually stayed on as a recurring character in the Greek version of the Golden Girls. If that tells you anything about how much I know about the Golden Girls, I am even aware and understanding of the Greek version of the show.
I don't think 1986 primetime TV was ready for Coco. I think they ran the pilot and I think they said it's an interesting character. I just don't think we're ready for our Meshach Taylor character from Designing Women yet. Like we're not there yet, but we're gonna get there. Just we're not ready for Coco.
Yep.
But 80s sitcoms were rife with Greek, like, remember Balky from
Mykonos. Like, he was from Mykonos.
Yeah, Balkans. Which, characters from the Balkans were hot in the 80s. That's true.
Yeah.
No, Coco, I believe, he was probably, like, a Cuban-American, definitely Latin flavor character, but he was the personal chef in episode one. And then like episode two, it's like, there's no explanation of where Coco is. Like Coco's just gone. He's just gone. And we're right into Stanley Spornak territory. So I didn't appreciate the fact that plot point was not addressed between, the pilot and the second episode, maybe they'll do a prequel. Maybe they'll do a Golden Girls prequel someday and we'll get more of Coco's story.
I'd be so into that. more into that than watching this shit ass team play on Sundays. Yes.
Yeah. Like the best part
just
of
Sundays.
Go ahead.
Travis just wants to add a fifth bust onto the Mount Rushmore on his chest and adding Coco.
You know what? I really should like add Coco like kind of down in the woods somewhere or something.
just that shirt alone. He's got that great blue Hawaiian shirt. It's pretty good. The best part of Sunday was not football for me because all my fantasy teams got destroyed. My dynasty team is just leveled because the Arizona backfield is just gone and you ruined my day telling me that Kenyon Drake is now an Arizona running back. So it's bad. But yeah, like when the bright spot of your day is watching the premiere of the last season of Silicon Valley, like that tells you how football's going for you. So, all right, gentlemen. Well, hey, thanks for the time this week. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks, Travis, for coming up for my fundraiser. We appreciate it. And Scott and the Play Like a Jet crew, we appreciate the fact that you might have had your, you needed your, you know, Southern Greens were delayed because Travis needed to make a trip for me. But we will see you guys next week. We will dig into Adam Gase and the coaching staff more next week because, right, if the Jets come out of this game against the Miami Dolphins and they lose, like, it is over. It is over for this coaching staff. Would you agree?
Oh, I hope so.
Dunzo. Yeah, like,
so I never root for a Jets. I never root for a Jets loss. But, like, if there is an upside to rooting for a Jets loss, I'm just saying that, like, you know, we might get a reboot of the reboot of the reboot, Travis, which would be exciting for all of us, I think.
Yay!
From meta level. All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for, you know, kind of dealing with us as we scrambled through the Leonard Williams trade news, but hopefully you'll find that helpful and informative, and we will see you next week. Thank you.
Let's fire Gase.